coming to you live from Comic-Con at home. We're in the exhibit hall at our house. Yeah, so our little badges. Yes, we would have been professionals.
Yes.
But no. No Comic-Con for us. So, like a lot of you who might have been planning on going, as you know, Comic-Con got canceled, you know, in person.
Yeah.
And so we've been doing the virtual.
Yes.
Since Wednesday, which was, would have been preview night, right?
Yeah.
I'm putting everything in quotes. Preview night.
We still did what we would have done on that day and bought a bunch of exclusives.
Right. And it started at 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
Instead of 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah. But some of that spilled over into Thursday.
Right.
And one of the exclusives already arrived.
Yeah, it's almost like being there.
If you're watching on Twitch, you can see this. It's Comic-Con exclusive Toon Blackluster Soldier Yu-Gi-Oh! Playmat.
Because you've gotten one of those from every time we've been? Or
yeah.
Yeah. So you have quite a collection.
It was like $30.
Yep, it smells like tires.
Yes, it does.
So... Yeah, it was you bought that yesterday morning.
Yeah.
And it got here today.
So yeah.
It was pretty quick.
I guess it's because Core TCG is in
Pasadena. But still, that's still quick.
Yeah.
So, how has this Comic-Con been different from previous Comic-Cons, besides the fact, obviously, it's virtual?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't feel like physically exhausted.
No, I'm a little tired at the moment, but no.
Yeah.
It's not the drained feeling that you normally have.
Yeah, or like my feet aren't feeling like they're going to fall off.
Right. On the other side of it, there's no real energy.
Yeah.
Watching panels on TV.
Yeah.
So we have a setup here where we're using a laptop and hooking it up to the television so that we can all watch them together.
Yeah.
And we've watched, a lot of panels.
Yeah.
Which I have a list of, which we can go over. Yep. Thursday was
kind of a wall-to-wall experience, which got physically and mentally taxing, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like just sitting there the whole time and not doing anything like productive.
Right.
So the first one we saw was PSNPC Storytelling in Video Games, which was actually interesting, considering mm-hmm. I've taken a class in video game narrative writing, which they actually talked about.
Yeah, that was actually good.
Then Cartoon Network Studios, The Art of Storyboarding.
Right.
We watched that one because... Mick Graves from Amazing World of Gumball and Julia Pott from Summer Camp Island were
on
it.
And they did for Summer Camp Island, they had a pretty interesting storyboard for us. And then they showed you the sequence.
Yeah.
In the show. That was pretty good.
And then they also talked about the process of storyboarding. And Mick Graves? Who held up Flintstones storyboard.
Yeah, it was interesting. He was talking about really that storyboarding should be pretty simple.
Yeah.
And he held up a Flintstones from the back in the 60s. It was a primetime television show.
Yeah.
I think it was the first animated primetime show. And he held up, it was like, you know, six panels.
Yeah.
And it was very simple illustrations in each. And he was saying that's really what a storyboard should be. And then, of course, the one for Summer Camp Island was really much more detailed than that. But but at the same time, it's going from drawing something analog to doing something digital.
And then I don't know how many passes the storyboard went through.
Right. But it does give you an idea that you can, because you're not having to recreate, you don't necessarily have to recreate every image over and over and over again by hand. You can, you know, I imagine with their storyboard, they're using a program, and they and they just change a little bit of the action on the storyboard.
Right.
So, makes it more, I think, easier to do a little more detailed work. But his idea was to try to keep it simple.
Yeah, and then after that was Cartoon Network Studios' first look.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched that because Mau Mau was in it, and that was the only interesting part. Well, at least to us,
yeah.
That was the only show, the ones they showed that we had been watching and that appealed to us.
Right.
And with Mau Mau, that was a work in progress animatic.
Something's come up on season three. It's two, right?
Right, sorry.
Summer
Camp Island is getting anyway, then from script to screen, which was super boring.
Yeah, I was...
It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it sounded like it was going to be sort of how to take a script and make a film out of it. And instead, it was...
meandering conversation.
They had three composers, which is fine. That's part of the process, but there was no... I was hoping for, like, you know, maybe a production designer or, a, you know, something a little more taking the words and making it into a film.
Yeah.
And it was sort of, yeah, meandering and... you know, the composer is very important, but three out of the six panelists were composers.
Right? Yeah.
And that, to me, is the end of the process. Not, you know, not, you've already made it onto the screen and they're adding music to it.
Yeah. But I will say there was one thing that was brought up.
Okay.
Talking about how they were composing the score after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
That reminded me of the idea that a lot of are composers who don't like that that's where composing is gone because some of the best compositions come from composing before they start filming and then the film is cut to the score, like Tron Legacy's score was memorable because they did that.
Yeah, I think that's really a filmmaker's decision to make. Whether or not they want to be, because really the music shouldn't dictate the film. I mean, personally,
right?
And I know in that case it was different, but usually you don't want the music to dictate the film. You want the film to the music to enhance the film.
Right. This could turn a whole other conversation, but that also ties into how a lot of movies use temp scores,
mm-hmm.
and so because they use the temp score during production, a lot of directors end up falling so much in love with the temp score that they just ask the composer to do the temp score.
Right, right.
Moving on, we tried to watch Draw Along with Dark Horse.
Yeah,
not very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, maybe for some people a bit wow, but for us it was like,
so we kind of bowed out of that one and instead watched Artist Boot Camp by DeviantArt.
Yeah, I think one of the things we realized too with virtual programs, it's easier to bail.
Yeah,
you know, no one, all eyes aren't on you as you get up as a foursome and leave.
Yeah, so you don't get that secret public shaming of bailing out of a panel.
Right. So we did watch
Artist Boot Camp by DeviantArt, and that was actually interesting because you got to see them go through these three artists go through their warm-up process and talk about how they get the juices flowing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, then after that, we watched the Science of Back to the Future.
Which is a little bit of a misnomer because there really wasn't that much about the science behind Back to the Future. It was a little bit about science and comic books.
Yeah. We only really only watched that because John Barber was
One of the panelists.
Yeah.
Mighty W. Hey,
yeah.
John. and so yeah, we did watch it. And it was, I mean, I understand it was interesting, but it wasn't like, tell me something I hadn't already kind of heard, that a lot of times science fiction, you know, sort of helps science in a way.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, the cell phone that people use, you know, was the communicator on Star Trek, you know, and that kind of was that idea of being able to do something like that. So, I mean, you know, if you want to buy that.
Right.
But it sort of, the little description talked about, you know, the hoverboard and all that, and they never got to that.
Or they barely touched on it if they did. Then right after that was Bugs Bunny's 80th Anniversary Extravaganza.
And commercial.
Yeah.
For a 60 cartoon set that's coming out November 2nd or 3rd,
sometime in November.
Yeah,
and we forgot.
It was basically a 45 minute commercial for this set.
Yeah, but they still made it interesting. I still found it interesting because they got three different voice actors for Bugs Bunny to talk about their experience with the character. and they were all very knowledgeable of the history behind the shorts.
They had Leonard Maltin on there as well.
Yeah.
Did it make you wonder, though, if they had three different people who had done the voice, and they all pretty much sounded the same, why the same guy wasn't doing it all the time?
I'm going to guess there's some other stuff involved.
It just seems like they weren't, you know, I don't want to talk about Bugs Bunny ever again. Right. It wasn't that point, but it was just like they moved on.
Disney has two different, at least two official Donald Duck voices.
Well.
And one of them works on certain projects and the other works on another type of project.
So these were more replacement. I mean.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not saying there's anything nefarious going on. It was just kind of interesting. The guy can still do the voice. Why isn't he still doing it? And he's not like he's, you know, an invalid or anything like that. So
right.
Anyway. It was very interesting. It was a kind of nice history of Donald Duck. And, Bugs Bunny. Sorry.
We were just talking about Donald Duck.
get me off. They mentioned Daffy Duck in there.
Yeah.
I guess it was Porky Pig was the big star of the Looney Tunes. Then it was Daffy Duck, and then it was Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
And he's been around for 80 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. But yeah, they actually talked about why Merry Melodies and...
Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Merry Melodies was sort of the answer to Silly Symphonies.
Yeah.
And then at some point they were basically the same thing, so they would decide this one's a Looney Tune, this one's a...
Merry Melody.
Wow. Tongue-tied over two words.
Okay, then we tried to watch State of the Industry.
Uh-huh.
Animation Superstars. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember a single
one. Yeah, no, I think we kind of built on it.
Yeah, but then we watched Mr. Science Theater 3000, a panel panorama.
Right.
Which was actually interesting.
Yeah, and I think, I know that we've talked about this on a previous somewhere.
Yeah.
About how one of the best panels we ever went, experiences at Comic-Con was me and Joel Hodgson, because he made a point of going through the line and shaking everyone's hand.
Yeah.
And so he's still the same basic, you know, person he was then.
He seemed very down to earth.
Yeah. And it was kind of interesting because I got the impression that these guys had come along some maybe at different times within that run and necessarily hadn't necessarily worked together,
right?
But they were all like, you know, it was all part of the, you know, the brethren. It's kind of interesting to see Mike Nelson and Joe Hodgson ever together.
Yeah. Well, Mike is the one doing Rift Tracks.
Right.
And Joel did Cinematic Titanic. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, they're both not talking together about Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Right.
I mean, I haven't seen it. Maybe they do it all the time, and I just never see it. But
right.
It always seems like it's Joel.
Probably because he created it, so he's also kind of the face of it.
The one thing I was hoping they would ask him was how he, because obviously he was a stand-up comic in Minneapolis, and how did he get started doing it?
Yeah.
Never actually asked that question. But, and maybe it's in a book somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, so today, we started off, there were fewer panels.
Right.
Which was actually good, because we had time to breathe and do other things.
Right.
So first was HBO Max, the Cartoon Network Studios collection.
Right.
I think, again, the most interesting part was Summer Camp Violin.
Mm-hmm.
This was remembering now, that panel was definitely aimed more at a younger audience.
Because they were doing little
like crafts.
Yeah, crafts you can do at home.
Yeah.
And
one of them was more of a sketch.
Yeah. Yeah. And
and then a literal sketch.
Yeah, one of them wasn't. Yeah, I'll make stuff. It didn't work, and then
I guess I should have said skit.
Yeah. But with Summer Camp Island, she actually made, you know, the old phone with the, you know, string.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was sort of different. Kind of. I think it was aimed at sort of a younger audience.
Yeah. I think I remember the third show in there was the Fungies.
Yes.
I'm not going to criticize it because it's not out yet, but, I want to say, I remember the one note we had was the, because of how easy it is to draw them, which is good for animation, of course, but because of how easy it is to draw, you more easily run into the problem of them having the same silhouette.
Yeah. Now, with you hope to have different silhouettes for your main characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, yeah.
But I'm going to assume they worked that out.
And again, I think that was aimed at a younger
audience.
Yeah. Prehistoric mushrooms or whatever they are.
So, yes, moving on. Adventure Time Distant Lands.
Yeah, we just so you know, we watched a lot of HBO Max panels. Yeah.
Well, because they were talking about the things we were actually interested in.
It seems like everything that was ever on Cartoon Network is now HBO Max.
Yeah.
And this was the continuing story of Adventure Time.
Yeah, they're going to do a series of specials, and the first one they already put out, which was Distant Lands.
Which they gave a big spoiler alert to.
Yeah, which, if you're trying to hype that, I don't know why you do that.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah. But maybe there's some of you've seen it already, but they gave, it was like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, so we were able to skip past that, because I want to see it.
Another good thing about watching it on video.
Yeah. And then they talked about future ones a little bit. That panel was okay, but at the same time, do we think the moderator was a little too...
Oh, was that she was so excited?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The voice of Amethyst from Steven Universe, which I get the feeling I need to try to see at some point. Won't happen anytime soon.
She was, yeah, very excited about everything. Was great, you know, and a lot of energy, but like a little too much energy, maybe.
Yeah. You can say that. The Infinity Train.
Right.
That one I found more engaging.
Yes. Yeah, it was interesting. It seemed like a very interesting group of people.
Yeah.
And they look like kind of like a fun, they seem like a fun group to work with. And they seem to have, again, they're approaching it differently. I mean, to me, going back to Adventure Time, you know, without, you know, the two main characters from the previous show are not in these anymore.
Yeah.
And in this case of Infinity Train, it's an anthology.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's different characters is okay.
Yeah.
And they were kind of priding themselves on something that I kind of prided ourselves with Power Squared, is they planned things early and have come back to them.
Yeah.
Which is something we did.
In this case, two of the main characters of book three
were first mentioned in book one and had a little bit of more introduction in book two.
Yeah.
So that seems more like, again, as they said, that seemed more like it made sense to bring them forward.
Yeah, then what was also interesting was they talked about the multi-plane technique.
Right.
For animation, including its origin without naming the companies directly.
Right.
And then showing parts of the show where they used it.
Which is all now in computers. And so the original was obviously all this, you know, glass frames under a camera.
Yeah, but they also showed how it happens digitally, and they even showed the individual layers, which was actually really interesting.
Yeah.
The behind-the-scenes material.
Yes, that was very good. I enjoyed it.
And then later was the HBO Max Adult Animation Panel, which is basically Adult Swim-related content.
Right. And it was kind of interesting and weird at the same time. One guy had a leaf in front of his face the entire time, so we can see what it looks like.
I'm guessing that was the point.
Yes, and I assume that wasn't by accident, but it was just odd. And they were talking a little more about really their experiences at Comic-Con than their actual.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The guy that was talking about Primal.
Gendy.
Yeah, was saying when he first went there, he had this presentation.
Dexter's Lab.
Yeah, and it was new, and he said thank you, and he left. He realized that nobody got up to leave, and he realized they were there for the panel after him, which was sort of ego deflating, I guess.
A little heartbreaking.
Yeah. But
also humbling.
Yeah. And so that was, and that's true if you've ever been to Comic-Con. A lot of times you sit through a panel to see another panel.
I mean, we've done it.
Yes. And you can be introduced to things that are really, you know, super cool that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe people got introduced to Dexter's Lab who wouldn't have known about it.
Yeah. But we've talked about how doing that is how we got into Watchmen.
Right. Yeah. So it was, yeah, it was a very interesting. Again, it was more about, you know, their experiences at Comic-Con, or and who, you know, celebrities and things like that. It wasn't really about their show so much.
Right. Then the last thing we saw was Viz, a haunting conversation with Junji Ito.
Right. And you were familiar with his work?
Kind of familiar with his work. I read The Enigma of... Crap. I don't remember.
That's okay. It's in Viz Weekly. Or, you were the magazine.
It wasn't published. I didn't read it that way.
Okay.
I read a scan.
Okay.
I'll be honest. But I also became familiar with his work because he was originally going to be on Konami's canceled Silent Hills project.
Right.
He was going to design the creatures.
Right.
So that actually would have been very interesting. And also I'm interested in Toonami's upcoming adaptation of one of his more famous works, Uzumaki, which heavily involves spirals.
Okay.
But
he was, you know, it was sort of a people, you know, asking questions, and they took fan questions, I guess, that people would submit it. And
yeah.
He seems like he's obviously very busy, and he doesn't seem like he's an outwardly scary person, but he's, you know, got probably a lot going on in his head.
Yeah. Made it sound like he's very busy.
Mm-hmm.
So he does like intermittent,
yeah, relaxations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ideas, and like a lot of other creative people, ideas come to him in the shower.
Right. Yeah. A lot of times you think things through and you're not trying to think about it.
Yeah. And he did end up teasing that he might be working on something with Hideo Kojima in the future.
Right. Yeah. The nice thing too about these being virtual is that you can look at them later.
Yeah.
I would probably recommend going to the Comic-Con website, going through programs, and then they have links to their YouTube video, and you can click on those, and you can. My guess is they'll be up for quite a while.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah. So, again, we recommend that you go if you really are interested. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to pay. You know, you don't even have to have a badge. But you can watch videos, and you should go through the program listing there to decide what you're interested in.
Yeah.
Basically, we're done with the floor, so to speak.
Yeah.
And we'll be watching more videos in the next couple of days.
Yeah, for example, another one we had marked for today, which we'll probably watch later,
mm-hmm.
is Building Your Own Themyscira, Connecting with Other Geeky Bosses, which sounds like a networking panel.
Right.
I know we've been to a networking panel before, but it doesn't hurt to hear a different idea on how to do it.
And the other thing that we're trying to do is not only create Comic-Con at home, but is create San Diego at home.
Yeah, that's right.
We've gone a number of years, there's certain places that we like to go in San Diego that we can't go because, well, they don't have one here.
Yeah.
Like the old Spaghetti Factory.
In a sea of chaos, it helps to plan some parts.
Yeah, and there's certain restaurants, El Indio and
Lucha Libre,
that we like to go to, and so we're trying to, as we can, recreate our favorite dishes from those restaurants.
Yeah.
As best we can. And you can't really do it exactly. But the Mrs. for the Cheese, the manager special, was pretty close.
Yeah.
I have to say that.
I guess it helps. It was official Old Spaghetti Factory Mrs. for Cheese.
Yes. I think we had to Sprouts or something to get
that. Yeah, we had to go out of our way to buy it, but it was worth it.
Yeah, it was good. So, anything else you want to mention about Comic-Con? I guess we maybe do a wrap-up next week, maybe?
Yeah, when we're doing that. I also kind of played around with the idea of doing a haul video. Where it's like all the stuff we ended up
when we get getting. All the stuff in. Yeah, right, yeah. Now we just have the one item.
Yes.
Which we've already shared.
Yeah. All right. We're just not going to say the full cost.
No.
Because we're not those kind of people.
Yeah. So, until next week.
I'm Paul Hankins.
I'm David Hankins, and this has been On the Air with Power Squared, live from Comic-Con at Home. See you next week.